Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of the F1 Show for coverage of the Monaco Grand Prix in Monte Carlo, I would say. I'm Robin Warner.
And I am Jim Lau. And I guess we've just sort of had another uneventful weekend. It's been Sebastian Vettel on pole and to a Sebastian Vettel victory, and I don't think much else really happened.
Yeah.
So see you next week.
See you.
No, well, okay.
There was that one thing.
Yeah.
Remember?
So let's go back to practice.
Yeah.
To
start. Then we'll be done.
And then there's just that one thing. So, you know, it's practice and everyone's getting worked out with Pirellis.
The rookies are sorting out the kinks of Monaco in an F1 car.
Yeah. And there's this one guy, Michael Schumacher, I guess. I don't know if he's, you know, first time around Monaco or something. But, you know, just makes kind of a weird error coming up to start-finish straightaway. And then, you know, normally this is the turn one right-hander kind of around a artificial curbing there. And just kind of got it all screwball. Ended up going off to the left and into the tires. And,
well, you know how Google Maps are.
Yeah. So it's sort of funny. I mean, you'd think
it said left.
You'd think he was he'd have this place really well sorted out, and it'd be kind of a rare mistake to or an unexpected mistake for someone of his experience to make, I would say.
Right. No, I would agree. Although it's good in the sense that I hope what that means in reality is that he was pushing really hard and trying his hardest. And Schumacher has his flashes of brilliance still, but wasn't so at practice. So that was pretty much it. Then it was Vettel, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was qualifying.
There's that one other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So qualifying ended up, I mean, just fairly straightforward, I guess. I mean, there was the bottom, the bottom seven out in Q1, as always.
And then like Weber or Alonso was one of them or anything like that. Pretty straightforward.
And then actually Sergio Perez did a great job to get his car into Q3 in the Sauber, which is just, working, I think, beyond what that car is generally capable of, and really sort of that's why I think with a lot of the predictions and everything, people were kind of betting against Vettel, saying, okay, yeah, under normal circumstances and raw car speed and all that, Vettel's doing a great job, but hey, this weekend maybe something amazing can happen. And so a lot of people predicted against Vettel. But Perez, doing a great job and actually getting into Q3. Early on in Q3, though, just getting tires warmed up and getting up to speed, had just a pretty big accident. Ended up getting, I think, a little bit squirrely out of the tunnel. Then there's a downhill. Ended up getting his car up along the right side wall. At that point, he had no steering because the tire came off. Strangely, the wheel was still attached to the car.
He caught the hump in a kind of a weird way, and that's what kind of sent his car screwball.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was not in the greatest position when but he was trying to recover from it seemed like, and then he went over the hump with enough lateral build that it unsettled the car enough that sent him sideways. And fortunately, he tagged the wall, and instead of staying straight along the wall, he curved sideways toward the middle of the track and hit the barrier from the side, where there's a lot less, absorption ability from the car to, take the impact from the side.
Yeah, luckily it did look like a good amount of absorption from the barrier, though. It was a good, I think, just about the right amount of softness to get the car slowed down and, of course, stopped. But, it did collapse a lot. It was like some kind of hard plastic or something.
It collapsed as much as it could. Yeah, hard plastic, Jim. Carbon fiber, of course. Everything's carbon fiber on the car.
No, on the barrier.
Oh.
I don't think the barrier was made out of carbon fiber.
Barrier, yes. Okay.
So, yeah, the collapsible barrier on the track. Thank you very much, carbon fiber. And so anyway, he did actually have to be, pulled out of the car, and I think he may have been unconscious for a moment. But then, latest word is that he's recovering. He's in the hospital now, but, he's communicative and sort of like looks like he's going to be okay. He did not take part in the racing this weekend, and of course, so he would have qualified 10th, having made it through to Q3, but not setting a time. But obviously, did not take part in the race, and remains to be seen whether or not he'll be in action in 2 weeks in Canada or not. But I guess that's what happens when you steal Robin Warner's ride. Karma is just not on your side. But
that's what happens.
Seriously, though, we do wish him well, and hopefully,
I'm sure he'll
be fine. It doesn't seem like too serious of a crash. And I guess that pretty much wraps it up for the weekend.
Yeah, that's I will say, though, I'm looking at an article now, and it does look like that it says that Perez is looking likely to be in Montreal, and it's going to be okay for him. So that's a good thing. I guess that's what. No, there was that one other thing.
There was
the most exciting race of the season happened.
Yeah,
Absolutely incredible. Okay, we can't we can't hold this charade anymore. It was freaking incredible.
Yeah, it was nuts. I mean, so we had, like we said, Sebastian Vettel on pole. The qualifying session, because of Perez's crash, and then red flag, was a little bit. Hamilton, I think, was the big loser in that because they didn't set an early Q3 time. So by the time
I think it's because he's black. Can I just say that?
We will get into that much later on.
I'm just
saying. Oh boy, we're gonna get letters.
You know it's true.
But so what happened with the red flag with Perez's crash in Q3, then there just wasn't enough time for the supersofts to get back up to temperature to get the grip. So it was Sebastian Vettel's earlier pole time that ended up becoming the time.
No one was close.
Yeah, no one got back up to that speed. So it was, Hamilton was then, of course, sort of blaming the team, saying, oh, our strategy was all wrong. We should have got a time, a lap time in earlier and whatever. So it was partially lucky for Vettel, but, I mean, Vettel had the pace. It didn't just fall into his lap. I mean, he did a great job and was really able to get that car around Monaco really, really quickly.
I would just like to point out, though, that it's almost certain that had that not been the case, Button would have put in a lap better than Vettel's because Button's awesome.
Well, he did. He
was second.
Outside pole.
Yeah. He was outside pole, which was really good. No, in all honesty, I was very happy to see Button's performance in general. And certainly Vettel did get lucky, but I'm not sure anyone would have touched that 13.5 either way. I mean, that was a very good time, to be sure. And, I was impressed. I was impressed that Vettel pulled it off again because I really thought that this was Hamilton's chance to, have enough of an impact on, the driver-car combination to, be able to squeak out a pole position. I thought if anyone could do it, it would be Hamilton. I think this year, I think McLaren is pretty certainly solidly the second fastest car.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really stood out in Monaco. Alonso's in the third fastest car, and he's driving it like it's the second fastest car, which just goes to show his abilities. And, Hamilton, if it was the team's decision to wait till the end and save tires, then maybe that was a mistake, because I would agree that if there's one place where qualifying still is going to definitely have a huge part in your finishing order, it's going to be Monaco, because it's the narrowest track, and even we saw with the DRS zone, it's the flaps open for about 4 seconds and that's that. I don't think there was much any DRS passing that we saw. Certainly nothing like China.
Yeah, or Spain or anything. Yeah, the DRS was barely used. As they talked about, if there weren't a hotel and a tunnel involved, that part of the track would make the most sense for a DRS zone, as one of the few sort of straight-ish places. I mean, it is still a curve, but it is pretty high speed. But they decided not to use that DRS movable rear wing into the tunnel. So yeah, it was just on the front straight, and it was just for a little bit. So Sebastian Vettel did a great job. I mean, he had a fine start, was able to pull away, and Mark Webber, who was in third, ended up just moving back. I mean, he finished fourth, but it was really all about Rosberg had a brilliant start,
uh-huh.
Made up a bunch of positions. Schumacher, his teammate, had a terrible one, and so it was actually.
And that's after Schumacher qualified fifth. This is one of Schumacher's strongest qualifying performances this year, probably since he's returned. He was solidly fifth. He was solidly ahead of Rosberg in qualifying. It was actually really nice to see. And then the race started, and he didn't move, and Rosberg literally just shot right around him.
Yeah, it was pretty wild stuff. But it ended up with, I think it was Hamilton and Massa, just trying to chase it around. Well, I guess first of all, it was Alonso. Alonso Button?
Yeah.
In the opening stages.
So Alonso started fourth and got around Button for started fourth, got around Button. I mean, got around who was third?
Webber.
Got around Webber for third, and so it was a Vettel Button Alonso battle, and the three of them kind of chugged along for a little while, but then the different tire strategies started splitting them up. Alonso had a great start to get around third. He had definitely had a charge to get second, but Button held his ground.
Yeah, it was you know, good defensive driving from Button to do that. But Vettel was just sort of taken off in front of these guys. You know, just yet again.
Yeah,
I mean,
2 seconds
Monaco,
a lap at first,
anywhere. Yeah. I think it was only probably 10 or 15 laps in before he was starting to lap the HRTs.
Yeah,
which, you know, actually didn't set a time in qualifying, but were allowed to start the race. You know, they appealed to the stewards or whatever, and they apparently set a suitable time in Friday practice. Although I don't know if. After seeing how much of a factor traffic was in the race, not necessarily for the win, but I think overall in the race, they may revisit that. I mean, there's really no other track that's quite as traffic intensive as Monaco.
Uh-huh.
But I was a little bit surprised to see that the HRTs would race, since they didn't take part at all in qualifying. They just had car issues, mechanical issues, and couldn't run. And you know, I think that's part of the point of the 107% rule. Wasn't really to say if you don't get a lap in, you don't get to race, but if you can't go fast enough, and you know, they're definitely, traffic is a tricky situation around Monaco, and I would not want to be in that position of knowing, you know, I'm driving as fast as I possibly can in this car that is not handling well, is not sorted out, not dialed in. And especially, you know, these guys are not the most experienced guys, and constantly looking in your mirrors and then figuring out who's behind me, where can I go, you know, where can I be out of the way,
right?
And is the guy behind me that's charging through, is he in a battle with someone else? So how many cars do I let through here? I mean, that must just be nerve-wracking on its own.
I would say to a certain extent, but, you know, they've all got radios, and none of those guys are inexperienced racers, period. You know, it's not like they were racing kid carts and got the call from HRT. You know what I mean? Like, I frankly feel like the 107% rule is a little stupid. And I think, just to your point, if there's going to be a race where it stands out, it would be here. And I don't think HRTs were the problem. You know, there were lots of, you know, very exciting moments to this race, some of it a little scarier than others, but it wasn't involving the slowest cars or because of them, I don't think. You know, if it were some slower cars, definitely lap traffic, but I don't think it was an HRT issue. It's not like the Happy Fun Team, Super Aguri, their first year where they were so pathetically slow. And what was that one? Do you remember that driver?
Yuji Ide?
Yuji Ide, he was shockingly slow to the point he was scary.
It was either him or Luca Badoer.
Poor Luca. But Yuji Ide was, like, uniquely slow and dangerous. That I completely agree, but that's like the 120% rule. That's not 107% rule. I frankly don't think the HRTs were a problem in this race, and if they're not a problem here, they're not a problem.
Fair enough. So anyway, as it happened, we did have some exciting passing, not because of DRS, although, I mean, it may have been the case that DRS did help the guy behind to just catch up a little bit of track time, a little bit of momentum. But it was actually, you know, going down into the hairpin, into the tightest of the hairpins, as well as exiting the tunnel and on down to the, down to the Nouveau Chicane.
But that was pretty rare. I was expecting more of that than we got. And
yeah.
It's just like, it's, you know, it just goes to show that Monaco, we've talked about this in the past. It's a terrible, terrible racetrack.
It doesn't make any sense
really
as a racetrack.
Awful, but it produces some of the most amazing racing. And there's something about it that it's terrible in a way that works.
That makes it amazing.
Yeah, because, you know, there wasn't much passing for all these different gadgets and gizmos and tire differences. But what did happen is that everyone wants to win Monaco, so I think there's that little bit of extra effort. And the second thing is, because the tires are different than they have been in the past, we definitely saw different strategies take place and changes in the strategy mid-race,
mm-hmm.
causing interesting things to occur and causing different strategy. And, you know, no one had a different strategy between Vettel and Button, and they ended up – they started and finished – essentially in the same place, chasing each other, and in two very, very different ways.
Yeah, well, it's funny. The Vettel thing you mentioned, it was interesting. So everyone except Hamilton started on the tires they qualified on, which was super soft. You know, with the soft. This is the first time we've actually used the super, super soft Pirellis. And
they're red.
Yeah, they're the red band on them. And So Hamilton, you know, sort of think and thinking about it, it kind of makes sense that if you can start on the opening stint when everyone's still pretty close together, there's probably not going to be a lot of passing. It shouldn't be too hard to defend your position. And on the harder tire, you know, get that out of the way. And then later when everyone else is on more worn tires and on hard tires, that you could come through with super softs and kind of have a strategy and make it work. And that's actually not really what happened. So Vettel, like everyone else, started on the super softs. And then came in for a pit stop, and there was actually a miscommunication, and it was kind of awkward because you could see the tires. I think they were expecting Mark Webber, or either that, or they had a very last-minute call to change tire strategy, but ended up putting what's the soft tire. It's the harder of the two compounds, so that was always a little confusing.
Right,
but
right.
The prime tire on the car. And as a mistake, but apparently it was actually Vettel. It was a set of tires for Vettel, because if they had put Webber tires on his car, there would have been penalties or disqualification involved. So that would have been a big major drama. But
we were both kind of hoping for that, A, for our predictions going well, and B, for the statistical model's predictions to go badly.
Yeah, there was,
which is unfair to Vettel, but I'm sorry, it needs to go down.
Yeah. So anyway, he went on to the harder tires, pretty, you know, midway through the race, and. Sort of, and so as a happy accident, sort of said, well, I'll just stay this way, you know,
yeah.
Like, let's just see how long we can make these tires work. And he had a, you know, a good amount of lead and sort of cycled back up to the front with pit stops. So for a while there, Jenson Button was looking like the guy, because it's like, okay, you know, Vettel can't make these tires last the whole length of the race. There's no way. And he
ended up not making them out.
He didn't, but let's try not to get ahead of ourselves. and then thinking, you know, Alonso probably at that point, his tires were more worn than Button's, so maybe he can do this. But then Button did a pit stop, and then it all kind of got, it never quite worked out for Button to go in.
Well, yeah, so if we can kind of talk about this for a minute. Button did three pit stops. Vettel did one. And that's usually, you know, that's opposite of what you usually see. Button usually tries to make tires last longer and hold up. And Button's like, well, I'm going to change it up this time. And just like you say, it looked like a really good decision. And Button, you know, he'd done two stops. And he's like, oh, he's going to pull away and clear, you know, and something that wasn't what happened. He ended up doing a third spot. And we're like, well, he's toast. And then he immediately, like a second and a half a lap faster than both Alonso and Vettel, catches them up again.
Yeah.
And he's like, cool, now I just got to wait for them to pit. And neither of them were pitting.
Yeah.
And that's where it got. And, you know, Button even got on the radio. He's like, when are these guys pitting?
Yeah. So it was, pretty kind of an interesting reversal there. But so sort of meanwhile in all this, Hamilton is just trying his darndest to get around Felipe Massa.
Yes.
And ended up trying what Hamilton says was Massa turning in on him way too early. What looked more like Hamilton getting way over optimistic.
DWB, man. DWB.
In the tightest chicane. And so it ended up where that didn't end Massa's race, but Massa's race ended a few turns later in the tunnel.
Absolutely.
When Hamilton had sort of just gotten around him. They were sort of side by side going through a couple corners, and then Hamilton was on the main racing line, which drove Massa out to the outside. Onto where he says, oh, there's no grip, and he had nothing he could do, but he ended up hitting the wall, and it was day done for Massa. Although we didn't really see anyone else, you know, there must have been other times there were cars too wide, and no one else did slide into the edge of the hotel.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we never saw a direct replay of what actually caused Massa to, you know, the beginnings of that incident. We saw the ends of it coming out of the tunnel. But, you know, it definitely, you know, obviously, Hamilton definitely forced his way into the hairpin. And, you know, his claim that Massa turned early, I think, is a bit bunk. And he definitely forced his way into the – but those cars, they can only turn so tightly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you literally – if you do inside, 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 you literally can't do that. Like, you just can't turn enough for that. Unless you're going really slow. But if you're anywhere near the limit, it's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he literally bumps into Massa and punts Massa around a little bit. But Massa stays in the lead. But what it probably does is, you know, screw Massa up for the next corner. Maybe Hamilton once again forces his nose in, coming out of the final corner before the tunnel. And Massa ends up outside and squirrely. So, you know... No one else. Did anyone else get outside and not crash too wide? Maybe not. But Hamilton was definitely driving very aggressively. And if you were to base any of what anything would happen coming out of the tunnel between Wasa and Hamilton, what we saw a couple corners ago in the hairpin, well then
it's probably a lot of aggression on Hamilton's part.
Yeah.
And just Wasa reacting and doing what he can. So that ended Wasa's day and did it actually result in a penalty for Hamilton. So that was a drive through and he came back out, and I mean this weekend really came unraveled, I think, for Hamilton, because even we didn't mention in Q3, he qualified 6th. And then his fastest time was actually taken away, because they determined he'd cut a chicane. So that would have been even before the whole red flag for the Sergio Perez incident, because his fastest time was before then. So it's like he was already on the edge and a little bit beyond the edge of
right.
sort of safe and sane racing and qualifying, pushing a little bit too far into a chicane.
What I would call it is respectful racing, just respecting the fact that there's being aggressive, and then there's just being, I guess, belligerent. You have to at some point give just a little bit. And Hamilton was a little bit relentless, and that type of style has been very rewarding for him in the past, and fantastic for us as fans to watch in the past. And you have to give huge amounts of credits to his ability to do it. Many people, I'm sure, would want to be as aggressive as Hamilton, but they just can't pull it off. Mm-hmm. But
and sometimes even Hamilton can't pull it off.
That's the, right. I mean, but there's a line that, and sometimes he gets close to that line the most, and sometimes he's more likely to cross that line where you're just being disrespectful to the other drivers. And when you cause incidents, you got to be called on it.
Yeah. So with that time taken away, he officially had no time in Q3, so he would have started 10th, except that Perez was out of the race. So Hamilton ended up qualifying 9th. So already my prediction for a Hamilton pole position was just way off. And so he was already kind of on the back foot from there. And then, working his way through traffic and having to be really, really aggressive and try to make his way up. I mean, he did have several bumps and bruises. But just to move forward in the race, I think the next kind of major incident really was amid actually quite a bit of confusion. I think it started with Sutil just running wide in the pool complex, and ended up losing his right front wheel, and then he couldn't steer around, so they ended up kind of skirting across the track, and then a bunch of other guys. It was just a whole pack of cars just running in together with a lot of guys with nowhere to go and not sure how to react. But it ended up with Petrov taking a pretty heavy shunt into the wall, into one of the barriers, with another side impact. And I realize there's no hard plastic crumple zone on the car, just to make that clear that, that's not what I think is going on.
That's what it sounded like. It's like a hard plastic carbon fiber.
No, actually. So this I believe was part of the metal barriers, but
if it's Monaco, maybe it's just made of jewels.
It's probably diamonds. But and ended up with several cars out of the race at that point, and Petrov specifically, having to be sort of airlifted from the car, or was kind of pulled out of the car. Apparently, he was sort of trapped in there.
He wasn't airlifted.
It was an
ambulance.
But yeah, that's the one. But they had to lift him up out of the car into the air with their hands. <It's> not... Never mind. Okay, you know what? So. Thankfully, again, he's not seriously injured. I mean, I think they're doing some checks on him to make sure he's okay. He was complaining about ankle pain and I think something in his lower legs, but being in pain. But otherwise, he is probably expected to be back in Canada. But it's like we talked about last week. It's been this is the first safety car of the season. But with this whole situation with Petrov and everything and the ambulance has actually ended up being a red flag with 6 laps to go in the race. So it was not only do we see some safety car action, which I was sort of predicting. I'm like, with everything, it's Monaco and everything.
Yeah, you absolutely caught it.
Then we ended up with several, two safety car periods, one of which being a red flag. And then so originally it looked like, okay, this red flag with only 6 laps to go, we're well within the 75% race distance where, if you red flag it, normally that's just the race is done at that point. But the marshals, and I think to their credit, said, no, there's no reason we can't restart this once the ambulance and everything is cleared and actually run out the last 6 laps of the race.
Absolutely. I don't know why you would do it any other way. I mean, if it's gushing rain, which is what often causes red flags most of the time in modern F1, it's mm-hmm. not these kind of accidents, you know, then it's like, okay, if you're red flagging the race because the conditions are so awful and you're 75% complete, then you're done.
Yeah.
I think that's the idea behind it. But it was a bright and sunny day in Monaco.
Yeah, it was just a matter of how long would it take to get everything cleared off, and then it was actually not that long of a time. And so they were able to restart it. So what was weird was that in between period where, okay, so it's a red flag. No one goes to the pits. Everyone just goes back to the grid spots, basically, because there's no wave arounds for lapped traffic, which I think is something you and I have talked about in the past. We really wish that we could get all the lap cars out of there, and especially certainly in a safety car, yes, but especially in a situation like this where it's this is sort of the first time we've seen this situation. But it would have been much, much better to have the proper top running guys without the lap traffic in there to be able to restart cleanly and actually just sort of fight for position on track. And let these guys sort of unlap themselves by one, so the race is suspended. So guys are actually allowed to work on the cars, which meant Lewis Hamilton could get a new rear wing or new side end plates for his rear wing because he had just recently, just like on the previous lap, or actually two laps prior. Had crashed into the back of him, which deranged his rear wing. And then we all thought it was weird when he drove past the pit entrance and says he's got a broken rear wing. It was kind of hanging low and not right.
Yeah.
And to go past the pit lane to say, oh no, I'm just going to keep driving, was like kind of a strange call.
I know, but I think if he pulled in, he was done. There's no fixing that, right?
So. And it ended up being perfect because once the race was red flagged, he was able to. Have his guys out on the pits, out on the grid, fix that rear wing, get it replaced, get it back onto, back in just in time, ready to go racing again. So that was a very, very lucky result for
Absolutely.
Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise it probably would have been day done after a few more laps. But that also meant that the guys could change tires. And that started to get a little bit squirrely because it's not a scheduled pit stop. There's no penalty for doing so because everybody was red flagged. And everyone was allowed to, so in a way it's an equal playing ground, except that some people had fresh tires to use, Vettel had not used, more than another set of his super soft, so he had a brand new set of super soft tires to use.
It undid a whole race's worth of strategy that different people were building up.
Yeah.
So Vettel was in that position because he'd made the call to be on super old tires. So this was kind of saying, okay, well, here's a gimme. You know what I mean? Like that, that is where it was a little bit unfortunate because we're racing again, which is great, but we're taking away all the strategy that the teams, everyone's laid their cards out on the table at this point, mm-hmm. for a Porco reference. And, you can't, so basically this is saying, all right, everyone can have aces,
Yeah.
So that was a little bit unfortunate. And then, At that moment, once that was clear, it was advantage Vettel because he was the only one on brand new super soft tires.
And as we know, in clean air and clean track and so on, he's just able to really get some magic out of that car. And with a brand new set of the softest tires imaginable, there's really no challenging him at that point. And even, the best Alonso had was a new set of, or a slightly used set of super softs. And so Button's whole progress towards this point where he ended up with actually putting himself in a really good position ended up kind of, coming undone. So it was lucky for Vettel that it happened that way. It was kind of disjointed with the red flag and restart and all that, just like qualifying. But ended up with, Red Bull and Vettel just ending up in the spotlight yet again.
Absolutely. And I think, again, what struck me, I have to say, is, Vettel is in a league of his own. He's in the fastest car in the field, and he's getting so much out of it that it's really incredible to watch. But one of the things that really struck me is this was yet another reminder of how good Alonso really is. And he's a double world champion and has then been kind of dancing around a little bit. And he's found a home at Ferrari, but at a time when Ferrari's not at its peak.
Yeah.
And to see him, we saw it in Renault where he won races in that Renault when he's in it the last couple of years. And we're seeing it now in Ferrari where he still now obviously gets the maximum out of the car. And when it was red flagged and everyone was going in the pits, Button was sweating bullets and not bullets, but Button was I don't think he was super tense necessarily, but he was hot and he was rubbing his eyes and he was like, okay, what do we do now? What do we do this? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, Vettel's kind of looking Vettel's
definitely looking. He's got the heat thing. He's got the cooling fan right in his face, stuff like that. Alonso is sitting still. Looks like he's ready for a nap, but just focused, calm, concentrated. And I'm just thinking to myself, this guy is just his mindset is pretty incredible, and his abilities are still really incredible. And it just so certainly Alonso does things that are very selfish at times, and he certainly has no issue with, you know, taking the number one spot and, you know, doing these kind of things. And he's got, you know, the most evil looking mustache on the planet, but he just keeps reminding me how phenomenally good he is at driving Formula One cars.
And that's part of the magic and the whole weirdness of Monaco is just, you know, with these really all these tight chicanes and all that, some of these direction changes where it's, you know, steering input in the air, you get around the left hander, the car is four wheels off the ground, just put in just the right amount of steering input that when the car bounces on the ground it rotates just the right amount to go around the right hand part of it. It's just incredible. And you know,
I do that my commute to work. I mean, you know, it's the few among us that can do that.
Yeah, and Alonso is one of them. And of course, everyone gets around the chicanes. I mean, we did see, you know, all the drivers made it work. But there's, you know, Alonso, just something about just the right amount of input. It's not overcorrecting. It's just driving that car just to beyond what it should be capable of doing. And for all that we can say about, you know, his personality and his tactics and everything else, there's definitely a major driving skill there. And it's doing the best. I think, like you said, you know, it's the third fastest car, but he's driving it like it's the second. And to that end, it's really a shame that it was sort of another so-so day for Mark Webber in what should be right up there with Vettel. You know, Webber's no slouch, and we did see some, you know, some great raciness last week from him, but it's he's just, you know, didn't
it's
have
not
it.
Clicking for him the way it's clicking for Vettel. Yeah. I mean, that's clear.
And Massa as well, you know, in the same to the same end. I mean, he's, you know, another big disappointment for Massa this weekend, and it's tough for Ferrari.
I mean, you know, and I mean, to that end, we can talk about disappointments. I really genuinely felt bad for Schumacher this time, who, again, like I said, had a really strong qualifying session. He had a terrible race start, but, you know, got around Hamilton, among other people, to start the beginning of the process of recovering from his race start.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly, I think it was after or during the first safety car that his car, it looked like he was trying to get into the pits and his car just quit. And I didn't read a report afterwards that really gave a full explanation.
It was an airbox fire, which sounds like more of an effect than a cause, but.
True. I don't know what the software engine code for that would be, but either way. His engine just quit on him, and it's unfortunate because we were seeing a little bit of the old Schumacher. I think a fifth place qualifying position in the Mercedes is a very strong result. So it was a shame to see him not being able to, you know, convert that into something.
Yeah, that for sure. I mean, just to looking down the retirements here, Sergio Perez did not start the race, as we talked about. Timo Glock on lap 30 had a suspension failure. Put him out. Then it was lap 32 that Schumacher was out with that fire. Also, it was that same lap with Felipe
and
Massa.
Glock suspension failure, I think, isn't that what caused the flag? Because it was in a place where they couldn't crane it out, I thought. Isn't that right? Maybe?
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. There was several Glock, like Rosberg incidents, and I'm trying to think of what the actual failure. Yeah, I guess that was. And then it was maybe coming up to restart. I don't know. But then anyway, the Schumacher car was weird because it did just, like, abruptly stopped.
Right.
And it was exactly in the middle of the track, and then they had the marshals pushing back into the pits. It was right before the pit lane. But then it was Massa's, out crash on that same lap after 32 laps. Then later it was, Jaime Alguersuari in the STR on 66, and then Vitaly Petrov on lap 67. Again, that's right near the end of the race, and then that's where it was red flagged and everything. And then just on the restart, Lewis Hamilton, today's bad boy, got involved with Pastor Maldonado, who ended up, with four laps to go or five laps to go, ended up being crashed out of the race. And that must be a huge disappointment.
And how did he do that? He forced his way into the hairpin again.
Yeah, it was. That was a turn one, but it was, you know, it was just sort of forcing the issue. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
And it was, you know, so I mean, Pastor Maldonado, we didn't talk about him much, but he qualified eighth in the Williams. I mean, great job.
Got to Q3. I mean, he didn't, you know, his Q3 time ended up being well beneath everybody else's, but it was also he didn't get a chance to properly warm up his tires like anybody else as well, because he set his time after Perez's incident.
Yeah, and I guess he would have been pretty much last if Sergio Perez hadn't been out and if Hamilton hadn't been pushed back, whatever. So,
probably.
But, I mean, either. But he got to Q3, and he was really showing some speed out of the Williams. So that was exciting. So that's a big disappointment there. So it actually, you know, this is 17th spot for Narain Karthikeyan. It's probably one of the better results for them lately. Uh-huh. I mean, it's sort of, you know, we haven't seen this much attrition in a while.
But can we, before we go to it, can we close out this whole Hamilton thing?
Yes, I was just gonna talk about this. So that's a lot of incidents with Hamilton.
Yes.
A lot of aggression and a lot of forcing the issue what he himself won't take any blame for.
Right.
He was, you know, in all these interviews and post-race interviews and everything is just like, oh, no, he was crazy. You know, this guy closed the door on me. And, oh, there's no way he was going to make that work.
He said both Massa and Maldonado turned in way too early in both those instances, and then that's somehow his fault. He also claimed that Massa blocked him in qualifying, but that was also his fault. I didn't see that incident directly because I had, you know, I kind of rushed through qualifying. But, you know, clearly, you know, and for anyone that's interested, our loyal and fantastic Facebook followers already have the YouTube video up. Thank you, Carl Ripa, for that. The YouTube video is up of an interview after the race that, you know, of Lewis Hamilton kind of unloading some frustration, you know, some comments that he's lamenting now. And we also posted an article that kind of goes through the process and also includes some of the apologies that he had to make to the stewards afterwards. We'll leave it at that. But I think, you know, my take on it is that he was driving very aggressively. The two incidents that I saw in the race that he got penalized for, he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And he once again is unwilling to admit his own decisions and his own participation in how an event unfolds. And, you know, same thing with him blaming the team for the decision about, you know, going late in Q3 and all this kind of stuff. It's like, you're not a pawn in this, Lewis. In fact, you're very heavily involved in many of these incidents. And some self-reflection would do him so much good. He's so talented naturally that he's like the Incredible Hulk. Okay,
follow me on this. I was hoping we get an analogy out of this. Okay,
he's like the Incredible Hulk early on. Please, just don't make me angry. Bad things happen when I get angry, and they do. Whether he's in the car or he's talking to the press, if he's frustrated, it comes out, and it ends up being negative impact on him. It just does, pretty much every time. He's got to find his zen place, go inside himself, and sort that out. He's not a rookie anymore. You know, he's working on his fifth year in the sport. He needs to calm down and think long term, take some responsibility for the way he drives. And the second he stops blaming anybody, I think Andrew Benson had a quote in his blog that basically said, I'm paraphrasing here, the second Hamilton starts taking responsibility for his own actions, the second he does that, he's going to be a better driver. And that's, I completely agree, and I feel the same way. And you and I have been saying this for a couple of years. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this isn't a new phenomenon for him.
Yeah, and he's definitely got talent, and I think more so than a lot of these drivers has really had, that's gone to his head so that he, in his mind, can do no wrong. And
yeah.
I think that there is a certain amount
of
that.
That's one of his driving styles, to do no wrong.
And I think there's a certain amount of that you kind of have to have to be successful. I mean, it's certainly at the top level of racing with F1 that you sort of have to be good, and of course, but you have to know that you're good and sell it and really, really feel that way. But I think a lot of other drivers are a lot more cordial when things go wrong about, you know, we'll look at the video, we'll see what happened. You know, I'm sorry that this happened, whether it was my fault or not, but at least kind of, you know, being a little more personable about it and a little more conciliatory about, like, you know, hey, these things happen, and if we look at it and determine it was my fault, then, you know, my bad.
Or at the very least, they'll say, from my perspective, it looked like this.
Yeah.
From what I saw, it looked like this.
And Hamilton was, I mean, definitely frustrated in his interviews, and sort of, you know, I it, you know, Massa crashes into me and I get penalized. And then Pastor Maldonado crashes into me and I get penalized. And I get held up and I get penalized. So he definitely feels like he's been singled out. So it was Lee McKenzie from BBC who was interviewing and says, well, why do you think that is? And so jokingly, like a doofus, Lewis Hamilton goes, oh, maybe it's because I'm black. That's what LAG would say.
That's what it is. And that's what it is. DWB, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and it's just one of those jokes. I guess it's like making a joke about a bomb in a security line for an airport or something. It's like, as soon as you say it, you should immediately know it's a terrible idea. But he's just kind of like, oh, wouldn't that be funny? And so you start seeing these posts that...
Well, even the interviewer was like, so?
She's like, yeah.
What are you going to do afterwards?
Anyway, and it's just, you know, so he ended up apologizing for making that remark, for saying, oh, that was a poor joke. It's like, no, it wasn't a poor joke. It was a race joke. But anyway, he never said, you know, he never actually apologized for sort of calling the stewarding a joke or saying that everything was happening to him or that he was being singled out. He says, oh, that was a bad way to express it. So it was sort of a half apology. But
right.
It's unfortunate because like we say, I mean, he's obviously talented. I think he's just sort of getting frustrated, and there have been some stories and some rumors about, oh, maybe he's going to move to Red Bull, or you know, maybe there's going to be some shifting around, because he's really been at McLaren forever, as you know, they found him when he was 9 and he's been going up from there. But it's tough to sort of see that unravel. I was wearing my Hamilton shirt today, you know, I was hoping for some magic out of him, and after qualifying and his 9th place starting, I knew it was going to be tough. But he was really sort of digging his own grave this weekend.
Dude, man, I had him for the race win. I was plenty happy to see him do well, and he just, you know, he was not doing himself any favors. So yeah, I think this time, really more than any other race I can think of off the top of my head, it really was pretty blatantly Hamilton's fault. Like, the last time I can think of where we had these kind of issues was Singapore last year. And he was getting pretty aggressive towards the later part of the race and bumping his way through places. And, he's a brilliant driver. Very possibly, even including Kubica, the fastest guy in F1 in terms of pure raw talent. Possibly. He's definitely one of the fastest. But he's not, at least at this moment, acting like the complete package of a true champion, of a multi-champion. If you look at like Michael Schumacher, for example, you would never see a reaction like that ever, 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 ever.
Well, he hardly gives interviews. I mean, that guy's a robot.
Well, that's one way to not have those reactions.
I guess you don't put your foot in your mouth if you don't ever open it.
Right.
So
well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah, and so there's, I mean, a couple other little things in the race that were kind of odd. I mean, there was an uncharacteristic miscommunication for Red Bull. Like we mentioned, how Vettel, you know, ended up getting the wrong tires, and then shortly after, Weber showed up, and they had no tires for him, and the guys were scrambling for the grid to have this happen.
Definitely did not. Yeah, that was a little unfortunate.
We saw a McLaren error as well, you know, with the same kind of thing, just kind of a slow, like, confusion about the
Hamilton
tires.
For Hamilton to stop, yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, the Weber thing, you know, that did slow him down quite a bit and could have been a position or could have been a few positions. You know, I ended up behind Kobayashi for a while, and then just on the last second to last lap, ended up getting around him for fourth place. But it was, it was kind of, I guess, part of the confusion of whether it's because it's Monaco, because, I mean, it is a short lap. So if you only have so much time to sort of make a call and get the guys in, it's a lot of short laps here at Monaco, so I don't know if that's part of it or just sort of the confined spaces and craziness of the whole thing. But it was actually several errors that almost sort of canceled each other out. Ferrari ended up being good on the pit stops. They were you know, quick in and out and fine. But Red Bull and McLaren, two teams you wouldn't expect to see these kind of errors from, did have some miscommunications and just some kind of just problems in getting the right tires and getting everything sorted out. And still, Vettel goes on to just walk away with the race.
Absolutely.
It's pretty crazy.
And you have to say too that had a great thought. Oh, yes. Okay. Everyone's still with me? Okay, good. This race was absolutely longer than Spain. Absolutely, in every possible term. It was, what, an hour? It was 2 hours and 10 minutes, including the red flags and everything else. Went by so much faster because it was so exciting. There's something so special and unique about Monaco that it just works. It's amazing to me how terrible of a place it is to race, and yet it just always comes out so wonderfully. Mm-hmm. And they got it. So it was a brilliant race to watch. I was on the edge of my seat for the last 30 laps.
There's never a dull moment in onboards. There's not, he's on this front straight, absolutely. So let's check back in with him 5 minutes later when he's down at the other end.
And watching the cars, just like you say, go through some of the transitions, the faster, I'm in putting in air quotes, part of back section of the track after the tunnel. It's so amazing to watch cars go shockingly fast with the Armco so close by. That race really astounds me. And I really loved watching every moment of it. Thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, for a variety of different reasons, it ended up being a pretty different Monaco Grand Prix, but just, I think, yet another classic race and another sweet addition to the 2011 series of races so far. But I think we need to hear the fans' voices.
Yes, and perhaps hearing you guys talk is a possibility again in the future. We did this a couple years ago, where we opened up a Skype account and we said, hey, leave us a voicemail, and if it's at all interesting, we'll put it on the show. And not many people did that at all. We had a few people, and we definitely appreciate it, but it didn't happen. But we had a comment on the F1 Show website, f1show.com, and from F1 Nutta, also known as Jay, who said he would like to input his 2 cents into the F1 Show. And he would like to do it for the British Grand Prix because it's his birthday and his home GP. Aw. Well, listen, Jay, if you would like to take the time and the effort of putting together a little audio file and emailing it to feedback@F1show, and if it's at all interesting or at all discernible, we will absolutely play at least part of it.
That was an issue with some of the early feedback. We got a few that we did not quite understand.
Absolutely. So do work hard to speak clearly. We have the advantage of double checking our efforts and making sure that we're speaking clearly. But if you speak clearly and if you have something to say, Jim and I are absolutely fans of all forms of media, of you guys interacting with the show. And if other people are interested in doing the same, please do so. Yeah, I think in this day and age with technology, the best way to do it is just record a little MP3 and email it to us.
Or whatever. If you, posting a video on YouTube is really simple. So if you just go, with your webcam or whatever, and you can post a link to that, anything like that. Just there's a lot of ways to do it. And if you have something you definitely need to say and you're not sure how to, you can email feedback@f1show.com, and we can sort of help you out with some of the process. But there's a lot of ways to get video and audio and everything moved around these days, and hopefully we can help you make that work.
So we're happy to do that. And if anyone wants to do that, we encourage you to do so, especially if you have something interesting to say. That being said, many people did have very interesting things to say. Neil Poppin was on the F1show.com, so was Paul. And Bellissimo also, wow, I didn't say that right at all. Bellissimo also was on F1show.com, leaving predictions and answering trivia questions on all kinds of cool things. And I believe we had some interaction on Twitter as well.
We did, actually. Jay, F1 Nutta, also says, hey, how unlucky was Jens on Sunday? Without the red flag, he'd have won, as Vettel had no rubber and Fernando would have hit him eventually.
Maybe. Who knows? So, I mean, that's a really interesting. And that's what's really unfortunate about them changing tires, is that there's a reasonable chance that Jensen could have. But Jensen is also terrible at passing, so he might not have,
Yeah, it would have been interesting. It would have been more interesting to have them, just stay on the same rubber and deal with what they got to deal with. And although, then you sort of, if they can't change tires, what about that rear wing thing for Hamilton? And should he have then had to retire because of his wing? And there's a lot of questions. And I guess it's just, it's in the bag now, and all we can do is sort of talk about it and think about what should happen next time. Also, Colin Sato posted, he suspected that the Lewis's "I'm black" comments were done in a way that he could make the point while claiming it's a joke. I don't think Lewis actually thinks that it's a racially motivated thing. I think he thinks that he's being singled out just because he's, sort of painting himself as this badass now. And all these interviews, he's saying that's just how I drive. That's how I've always driven. That's how
I'm telling you, it's that stupid little ring around his freaking face with the hair. Either grow a mustache and make a beard out of the thing, or just get rid of it. You look fine with sideburns. There's nothing wrong with sideburns. But this whole perimeter hair thing isn't working, Lewis. You're the fashion police. The sirens are ringing, sir.
Wow. And that's how we answer that question. and actually, so Teamwork F1 mentioned, you know, we said with that article you posted just a little while ago, how, you know, Lewis should look in the mirror before blaming everyone else. And Teamwork F1 comes back and says, shouldn't it be the others look in their mirrors and see that Lewis has been on their tail for more than 5 laps and is going to try a pass? So a little bit different as far as looking in mirrors. We're talking, you know, more looking into yourself, not necessarily the, you know, car mirrors and seeing who's around you. But yeah, it's, you know, what are you supposed to do? I guess if someone's, you know, coming up behind you and thinking about trying a pass, just, you know, you're not going to let him by. You're going to keep driving. You're going to keep doing your thing. And, you know, I don't think either Pastor Maldonado nor Felipe Massa was in a position where they should have just conceded the position and let him through. I think, you know, sometimes there are those cases. These, I don't think, were that situation. And that's just my opinion, but, you know,
speaking of opinions, Sean Scanlon wrote, look at Lewis's 5 most recent tweets, and they're probably not the 5 most recent anymore. Here comes the apology. I'm still a fan of his, but this act needs to stop. We don't need another Danica Patrick in F1, and I'd say to that, ouch.
Ooh.
Ooh, burn, sting.
Yeah, I think it's almost... Remember Tony Oliuzzi always used to kind of just be this like, oh, I'm going to wear my hair all sideways, or wear my hat all sideways, and like goofy earrings and whatever. It was kind of like, I'm the badass in F1, and like Lewis is trying to take over that role for some reason. But
yeah, but I mean, you know, when Liuzzi was the badass of F1, and more air quotes coming, he wasn't...
He was nowhere near the top.
Right, but he also wasn't... pissing everybody off in the process while he was racing. So all this talk about Hamilton, I wanted to bring up. So this is the quote from Andrew Benson's blog that I thought was very reflected exactly how I was feeling. And it is, the sooner Hamilton realizes that his quest to win the multiple titles he feels he deserves will not be helped by this sort of reaction, the better it will be for him. And I think that is exactly correct. And I just wanted to add that to the whole discussion.
It's like he wrote that as feedback to us.
Pretty much.
For our benefit.
But, you know, on Facebook in general, Colin Sato is very active. Sean Scanlon always is. Great, great addition. Rory Clark. Neil Popham, of course, the greatest fan ever. Carl Johan Rippa, he's been really helpful. Deb Miller, you know. A lot of things, a lot of people, a lot of things discussing, a lot of things. James Payne, you know, great conversations here, and we want to thank everyone. And there was another comment. It was a little bit older now, so I don't know where it is, and I want to make sure. It might have been Deb Miller. Someone on one of the fans is claiming to have coined the term TERS before us.
You know, oh, and instead of if gear ratios somehow become an issue in F1, and that becomes a factor, then we can have KERS, TERS, DERS, and GERS.
So anyway, I think it was Deb Miller, and if it wasn't, I apologize. I'm having a trouble finding it now. But okay.
Well, let me just mention, so for those of you who haven't taken part and whose name was not just read, the best place to visit if you wanted to give us some feedback, whether you're telling us your voice and we can record it, or if it's you know, just posting a comment in one of these various venues, is go to f1show.com, and there's links from there to our Facebook page, to our Twitter feed, and you can reply right to the post right there, or even send us an email if you're old school like that. So right now we've actually got 945 fans on Facebook. I guess it's called people that like us now. And it would be really, really cool to see that into the quadruple digits. So if you've got some friends of yours out there who are interested in F1 and are not tuned into our show, then we'd really appreciate it if you let them know about it, and we can get that up to 1,000 plus, because it's a really cool resource, and we don't post there often because we're not trying to blow up your news feed here. But when there's big stories, when our shows come out, when there's
things that catch our eye,
to be talked about, those will show up, and it should be nice. So again, just visit f1show.com, and we'll hear from you there.
Yeah, and absolutely. And just to close out what I was trying to say, if someone coined TERS before us and we didn't give full credit, we apologize. So to whoever wrote that, TERS is yours, and we're using it with your permission, we hope.
And we hope you're proud.
Because it's TERS!
Trivia.
Yes, of course, that means it is trivia time. And as every episode goes by, we ask a trivia question and see how many of our fun fans know the answer to that and how many people post it. And you can test your knowledge. So as ever, in our last episode, we had a question about the oldest living F1 driver's champion and basically who that is. And the answer, as a few people actually posted on the Facebook page and on F1Show.com, is Sir Jack Brabham of Australia, born April 2nd, 1926. And that's the day before my birthday, although not in the same year, as I am not
exactly
quite of that age. But he was world champion in 1959, 60, and then later in 1966. And he still shows up, and we see him at races. We saw him at the Australian Grand Prix and shows up in different places and still alive and kicking it. So rock on, Jack Brabham.
Yeah, rock on, totally. But on to the next question. This one is, I would say, a good quality question. It's a good, solid question that is going to rack your brain endlessly, I'm sure. The question is...
You're overselling it.
Am I? Shoot. Anyway, okay. So Sebastian Vettel won the race a couple days ago. Congratulations. He was a German. And the question is, when is the last time a German has won the Monaco Grand Prix? Shocking.
There it is.
It's going to be an amazing answer. Everyone's going to be blown away.
Literally blown away.
You know why? The guy's not German. It's crazy.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Finally, it is time to put our money where our mouth is, except no money is exchanged. It is predictions time.
I think we don't need to do predictions this week.
Oh, but Jim, we always do predictions.
Yeah, but we don't need to.
Oh, but we always do predictions, and we can't break tradition. Of course not. After all, we're not going to break the tradition of Taste of the Race. We're just doing it after the podcast, for example, and I'm getting hungry. And I think if we debate whether we should or should not do predictions, we're just going to delay dinner, which is going to be Monaco-rific. So what are your predictions? Well, what were your predictions, actually? That's a good question. I think we should start with who you predicted to be on pole position, because that's probably where most people would start.
Well, the badass of Formula One himself, Mr. Lewis Hamilton.
How did he do again?
Yeah, okay, ninth.
Listen, it was only one digit. It wasn't like it was 10th or more.
Yeah, well, it could have been
but
better,
it was as
but
bad
the,
as it
the
could be
strategery
with
and the red flags and the who's it and the what's it anyway.
Yes.
So that's a lot of points for me there. And then I figured very brilliantly, I thought that Mark Webber would go on to win the race because there's Red Bulls and maybe not Vettel, but somebody. No, that was bad.
That did not go well for you.
I end up with like 1,800 points or something.
Yeah, according to my little number thing, you got 11. Yeah, that's more than.
There it is.
Yeah, that's a shame. I also didn't do as good as I would have liked. I did correctly say that Vettel would be on pole position. I thought he was going to make it happen for Monaco. But I also thought Hamilton was going to pull it out, except for the race, not for qualifying. And I ended up also being wrong. Not quite as wrong as you, fortunately enough. But definitely, I think this is my worst performance of the year thus far with 5 points because Lewis Hamilton was sixth. The statistical model said that Webber was on pole last time, so he'd be on pole again, and Vettel won the race last time, and Vettel would do it again. Well, it was half right. Webber was third, and Vettel did indeed win the race. 2 points for the statistical model, which brings us to stats.
Yes, so on the Facebook page, there is a predictions tab, and again, a big tip of the hat to Neil Popham for putting all that together. But that's where you and all your friends can go and predict, as we do on the show, but you don't have the whole public humiliation part like we do. But you
right.
can predict who you think will be on pole and will win the next race. And the closer you are, the fewer points you have, the better you do. And I have to give a lot of credit to James Payne, who has only 7 points, tying the statistical model for first place.
Good on you.
In
keep
lowest,
that statistical model
score.
Honest.
And you, Robin, have just one more point with 8 points. Year and puts you in third. Sean Scanlon, Bodhi Tuladhar, Will Carver are right up in there, up through fifth. And then Neil Popham in seventh spot with 22 points, and I am right behind him in eighth with 23 points.
23 is not a bad number.
No, I mean, there's a lot of people, I think, were sort of like feeling Hamilton for this, and a lot of people missed some points there.
You know, that was Michael Jordan's number when he was at the Bulls, Chicago Bulls.
It's also, you know, the Illuminati, so there's that.
Nice one.
Filling out the top 10 for our fans on Facebook is Ben Hessenthaler with 24 points and Christopher Tate in 10th spot.
Yes, yes.
So to make your predictions, just visit facebook.com/MF1show anytime between now and the start of qualifying for the Montreal Grand Prix, and you can put your predictions in there for who you think will be on pole and will go on to win the race, and you can see how well you compare to the rest of us.
But we highly suggest you man up or woman up, as the case may be, and do it before even practice begins, which is what we do. We do it 2 weeks ahead of time and say, we put our line in the sand 2 weeks ahead of time and say, this is what is going to happen. And sometimes we suffer the consequences.
I usually do.
So, well,
in response, this time I'm just taking this stupid, simple, safe bet and just saying, dude, it's Vettel.
Oh, look at that.
I was thinking Hamilton because he was real racy last year, and it was this crazy race where all the tires were going off, you know, the tires were running out, and that was amazing. But now everybody has that, and dude, I just can't bet against this guy. I've made some trying to be a little bit different, a little bit. I don't want to just put Vettel all the time, but I'm just going to put Vettel all the time.
You know.
There you are.
Last year, was not what I was referring to, but the year before that, in 2009, the second we started saying, "Oh, it's just going to be button every time,"
then it was Silverstone, and then it was terrible when he races.
I think, given that it's Canada and given everything that's going on, I think Hamilton's going to convert.
All right, then.
I think something's going to happen good with Hamilton. What I don't know is if it's going to happen in qualifying or not. That's where I'm stuck. But I genuinely believe, based on everything I've seen, that Hamilton's going to win the race.
See, now that I predicted Vettel, he's going to like crash in the wall of champions and
come
25th or something. Somehow. Oh, man.
Behind the safety car. But who's going to be on pole is tough because this is a horsepower track, and the Red Bull tends to be a little bit higher on downforce and maybe not quite as good in just a raw horsepower fight. But we could have said,
like, Alonso's going to get up there. I mean, what do you think?
Well, that's just it. We could have said that very much so about Monaco as well, and we were proved very wrong very quickly. So I don't know if a McLaren's going to be able to connect or not, and if it is a Red Bull, maybe it might be Weber again. I don't know. It's tough to say. This is one of those tracks that I feel like,
because Weber has more horsepower than Vettel, is what you're saying. It's a horsepower track, so I think Weber.
Yeah,
it's more of a tall guy track.
All right. So, but I think I'm going to be repeating my prediction. I think Vettel's going to win pole position again, but I think Hamilton's going to win the race.
All right, then.
Yeah.
So somehow Vettel's not going to qualify, and all of us will get lots of points. Stat model, you and me.
Well, we're all in this together now.
We are in the same boat. So, speaking of boats. That's like the most brilliant thing I've ever said.
Yes.
We will see you guys. We will possibly have a little bit delayed show. It could be remote access because we've had a crazy schedule.
It's been very hard for the two of us to be in the same place at the same time. But we're going to do the best we can to do it. It actually has nothing to do with boats.
Nothing at all to do with boats. I can't avoid this speaking of boats segue. I guess it just gets me. So
speaking of boats, I'd like to take a bathroom break.
We will do our best to get you a show on time. I mean, it's great because Montreal, it's the same time zone as us here in Michigan, and so it's actually a race that's on in the middle of the day. Very easy for us to watch it live.
Absolutely.
We've even done, you know, I went to the race last year as part of my sort of honeymoon and everything.
Great honeymoon
But
idea,
now
by the
this
way.
Year, I'm going to be out of town, so I've sort of screwed up the
in
whole
plan. In a different
plan.
Time zone, no less.
No, it'll be the same time zone, but out of town.
I thought it was whatever.
Washington, D.C. No, it's not that far.
Oh, D.C. Gotcha.
Different Washington.
Yes.
At any rate, thank you, as always, for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks or so. I'm Jim Lau.
And I'm Robin Warner. Bye-bye.